Well, as a member of the Lutheran tribe, I am highly indebted to this wonderful presentation. But I'm not the respondent here. Dr. James Veltz, Professor of Exegetical Theology and Dean of the Faculty at Concordia Seminary, will respond to it.
Thank you very much, Uwe. Thank you very much, Mark. The highest compliment that I can pay to you as a Lutheran is that I actually recognize the Lutheranism that you characterized. It was a sound and, I think, profound layout, and we thank you for that. Furthermore, it was an outstanding explication. The 4 points: justification by grace in Christ, apprehended by faith, and true enough, not an idiosyncrasy, but an emphasis. Theology of the cross: to be victorious in Christ is to be called to suffer with Christ. Third, the two kingdoms. Political tasks are God-ordained and have been given a divine mandate. God provides guidance. And the kingdom of the left hand is truly God's work. And fourthly, simul justus et peccator. I'd perhaps invite you to consider the more radical formulation, totus justus and totus peccator, which is always more mind-blowing than that. But there are no evil people, just that good and evil runs through all of us. Thank you for that quote. What I think is most important about his presentation, however, is his explication of why Lutheranism seems to have had such little impact in the United States. And I would like to pick up two of his reasons and try to expand on them. First, I would like to take the last one, that Lutherans also fall prey to the American context. I would suggest it's a lot worse than you think. That it isn't simply that there is some individualism and consumerism around, but that it so thoroughly permeates ourselves and every single parishioner whom you serve. It is in the air and in the water, and it seems so completely reasonable. This might be said of Western Europe, but the American context is even worse, because the American context is afflicted with banditry. We actually take individualism beyond individual rights to the actual glorification of the breaking of boundaries and the breaking of the law. Think of advertising slogans you all know. No rules, just right. Drive outside the lines, no limits. This is particularly American, and I think it flies directly in the face of the Lutheran emphasis on order and ordering. But now I'd like to speak a little bit more extensively about reason number 5, that Lutheranism is a theology forged in the old world, the assumptions of Christendom. Here it is out of its element. The assumptions of Christendom prevailed. And I think this is exactly correct. However, this is an even more profound point, I would submit, than we would think at first blush. And that for two reasons. First of all, positively. We have to recognize that for all of the talk about the two kingdoms and the kingdom of the left hand and the state functioning as the sword of God, and as indeed operating apart, as it were, from special revelation, Luther could and did appeal to state rulers to do their God-given duty as Christians on the basis of revelation. So even though they're in the kingdom of the left hand, he says, for example, in his temporal authority, to what extent it ought to be obeyed. Grace and peace in Christ, again, illustrious highborn prince, gracious Lord, necessity is laid upon me and impels me to write about temporal authority and the sword it bears, how to use it in a Christian manner, and to what extent men are obligated to obey. He goes on. I hope, however, that I may instruct the princes and the temporal authorities in such a way that they will remain Christians, Some time ago, I addressed a little book to the Christian nobility, setting forth their Christian office and functions. The same occurs in his commentary on Psalm 82, in which he says, "These three verses of the Psalm, 2, 3, and 4, indeed the whole Psalm, every prince should have painted on the wall of his chamber, on his bed, over his table, and on his garments." Now, negatively, and this I think is a more serious point, the founding assumptions of this great republic are fundamentally, in my opinion, inimical to historic Lutheranism, to biblical revelation, and to historic Christianity. Yes, it is true that our country, the documents of our country, talk about a divine ordering of things, but this is in the abstract and it's deist. There is no active divine action to be contemplated. Let me read to you from the Declaration of Independence. And you know some of these words. "We hold these truths to be self-evident," really, "that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator." Well, there's a reference there. But listen how this goes on. "With certain unalienable rights, among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Earlier drafts had "pursuit of property." "That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their powers from the consent of the governed." How crazy is that? Not deriving their powers from the divinity. "That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people," what? "To pray to God, to work, to point the ruler to Psalm 82? No. "It is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new governments, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them seems most likely to effect their safety and happiness." Now, put in a slightly different but congruent way, I would say, for Lutherans, especially in the United States, our assumptions regarding kingdom of the left hand are biblical. The basis is special revelation from God, for example, Romans 13 and Psalm 82. Yet we argue our rhetoric is an appeal to natural knowledge and natural law. That is, what is accessible to all outside of special revelation. Now, this works under the following circumstances. One, if your notions of natural knowledge and natural law are informed by or revealed by special revelation. And then two, plus, then you feel that such notions are accessible without that special revelation, naturally. And now number three, plus, therefore, then you feel you can argue on that natural basis rhetorically and expect appeal to natural knowledge to be rhetorically persuasive. But in a postmodern setting, such as we are in, a deconstructive analysis fundamentally problematizes this approach. It unmasks it in the true sense of the word deconstructs, which does not mean destroy, it means unmask. It unmasks this procedure. It says, the deconstructive analysis, natural knowledge and natural law are frame-ups. Those concepts are frame-ups, constructs. What is driving the system is what you don't see. That which is suppressed, what is that? The special word from God that you have. In other words, your concept, it would say, of natural law is actually a version of special revelation and therefore Christian. And finally, therefore, all argumentation is propaganda, buttressing an advantageous position for those who argue. So, especially in postmodern America, the appeals that we may make as Lutherans to nature, to natural law, and to natural knowledge are increasingly seen as phony and irrelevant. Finally, I would say one of the things that makes things difficult for Lutherans in America is that it's so hard to keep the kingdom of the right hand and the kingdom of the left hand distinct. Here's an example. A local congregation, a local church, is a civic organization, possesses property. It takes and receives the benefit of fire and police. A local church is also a place of God's people gathering around word and sacrament. What happens now when the community in which this church finds itself votes on legalizing gambling? Well, you can use kingdom of left hand arguments and talk about the impact of gambling and so on the community, but everything slides pretty quickly to the kingdom of the right hand argument about morality and God's will, and pretty soon you look exactly like clones of the evangelicals. So what to do? Two brief suggestions. First, believe the sermon tonight, believe Romans 1, that there is, in fact, a law naturally written upon the hearts of men. Do not embrace radical postmodernism. You have to be postmodernist, but you don't have to be radical. That's an improper going off the deep end version that problematizes absolutely everything. The fact of the matter is, we're getting support in unusual places. Last Tuesday, the Science Times of the New York Times contained an incredibly interesting article entitled An Evolutionary Theory of Right and Wrong, with this interesting thought: people are born with a moral grammar wired into their neural circuits by evolution. How interesting. Hardwired for morality. Then secondly, trust the power of the word. Proclamation is not to be despised, not only in the area of the gospel, but also in the area of the law, and also the truth of God's created order. Thank you very much.